As we move forward, we're going to do some panel discussion with both of the speakers, and we'll, looking at the clock, we're approaching noon Mountain Time, but I think as long as people stay interested and engaged, they will try to balance being cognizant of people's time, but also enjoy the good, rich discussion with the speakers while we have them. So I want to start with some of the questions from participants, because it's awesome that we have a couple of participants who provided questions. And we'll start with one I'm thinking would be a bit easier in terms of kind of clarifying an issue that came up within the two presentations. So the first question from one of the participants is, Tapan, you said that there were no clear trends in precipitation in California over the past century, but Christiana showed a downward trend for water in Colorado River watershed. How do you reconcile these differences? Is California simply not able to measure as accurately?
Well, I can't speak from the water resources aspect, but I guess from the modeling side, at least when it comes to precipitation, there is, although there are some, depending on the region, there are some regions which show drier than normal conditions, but in general, the modeling skills for precipitations are not as great as temperatures. That said, there is more confidence on that increased variability into the future. So not sure if these uncertainties in different predictions or what's been reported now, but maybe it might become even a little bit more clear when it comes to the event, you know, as we move forward. If you look at the National Climate Science, National Climate Assessment report, and if you think Western U.S. in general, yes, I do agree that there is a slightly downward trend when it comes to precipitation. So it's drier conditions in the West and wetter conditions for the Eastern U.S. So that is a general understanding, but I guess the California in general has more uncertainty, but no clear trend. At least that's what my understanding is. I don't know. Christy might have better response than that.
No, that was good, Tapan, but Christy can add. But I also just want to clarify, I think the variables were different, where yours was a precipitation, annual precipitation measure, and Christy's was a supply of water in the river. So Christy, do you want to clarify on how you interpreted that difference?
I think the graph that I had up was definitely, you know, flows in the river at a specific point, and so as a non-hydrologist, I'll say, you know, relying on precipitation, snowpack conditions, and an area of the West that's pretty far away from California, and that certainly I know that water managers in California are grateful for the extent to which they can rely on a portfolio of supply from the Sacramento San Joaquin rivers and the Colorado River because of the variability in precipitation conditions that they can that can help them manage the risk water supply availability.
Okay, great, thanks. Another question from participant, I think is directed towards Tapan, but also Christy might be able to add some info. But it says, California farmers have overdrafted our aquifers. California passed legislation about 5 years ago to develop regional policies to create sustainable aquifers. What are some lessons from sustainable policies in the Ogallala Aquifer Basin that we may use in California? So I guess maybe Christy might be the expert on that one, but Tapan.
I'll rely on Christy's response.
Well, I was thinking you might because of your experience in Nebraska. I confess I haven't tracked the groundwater policies in California over the past few years. So I think that's definitely an area that's worth exploring further. Lots of good research possibilities there.
Yeah, and then California has this Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, where, you know, it's probably make groundwater pumping more sustainable as we move into the future. So I think that's one aspect where California is looking into that.
Yeah, it would be great to follow up in the years ahead to see how other states are approaching this issue and how the California policy, the SGMA, relates to other approaches in other states. Again, with another preference toward the participant questions, it talks about the delivery systems for irrigation. So the specific question is this the same as high efficiency irrigation systems? So how well has this worked in the West with the conversion to things such as drip and low pressure center pivots? Not at all. In fact, water demand has actually increased. So how is this doing in the Oglala Aquifer? Groundwater overdraft in California is at record levels. While popular promoting or subsidizing this practice doesn't seem to be an effective way to save water. Any reflections on that comment and question?
Well, I think it depends on the system, doesn't it? I mean, so certainly, you know, it's been fun to be in Wyoming that straddles two very different kinds of water systems, you know, with Oglala in the east and then these high elevation mountain valleys in the west. And so enhanced delivery systems in these high elevation mountain valleys maybe doesn't do that much, right? If you're canal lining, then you're missing out on the seepage from the canals into the ground, which then is used to great benefit by a number of producers and the environment as the water moves through the system. Whereas if you're talking about a Kansas situation over the Oglala Aquifer, I would think that enhanced delivery systems might actually, you might really do see a benefit, although Tapan may have thoughts on that as well.
Tapan, do you have anything to add for that one?
No, I think that I don't have anything to add to that.
Okay, no problem. I was curious if we could follow up on Tapan's mention of the Cal AgriClimate Project and the timeline and the tools that are planned for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's an ambitious project. We, as I said in my presentation, we want to make those tools really crop specific, and so the timeline is we are currently in a pilot phase. We did develop heat advisory system, frost advisory system. So those systems are not just using the historical data set, but it can assist growers in knowing what are their heat and frost risk in next 7 to 14 days, and not just the temperature, but how many days in consecutive you'll have temperature exceeding or above or below threshold depending on heat or frost. And so that way it determines the risk. And if growers sort of know it ahead of a time, there are some mitigation strategies that they can do. So those are in a pilot phase. And we are also trying to develop the crop monitoring and pest advisory systems, where it's more specific to the crop and the pest, and growers can easily track the potential, the growth cycle or the growth stage for crop or the life cycle of the pest, and make those management changes depending on that. And so we plan to have all those tools ready within a year or so, and then our next approach would be to take it to some of the growers and ag community and commodity boards and see whether these are feasible and if they want to see any changes. And so that way we'll do more sort of the quality check and make it more robust and more user-friendly. So probably in a year or so, we'll at least have some tools ready, more operational, and then we'll get more done as we move forward.
Excellent. Well, it's an exciting initiative. Hope you keep us updated on it.
And I should mention that this is not a new approach, but it's nothing has done similar to this in California. It's this type of approach is pretty successful in southeastern U.S., which is called agroclimate over there. There is also in the Midwest, it's called useful to usable. And there is one in the north, northeast and northwest, but nothing in California. And so we are trying to learn from those projects and make the best for California.
Excellent. Well, it's a great approach, and best wishes for the success of your program. Christy, wanted to back to you. In terms of, so you mentioned various upper state basin demand management kind of pilots and projects. Can you elaborate a bit on the timeline in terms of implementation of some of those, what the plans are for the different states? And then I just want to also kind of add a little side comment or clarification too about, you know, the 1922 compact, at least my understanding, you know, is this regional approach or a regional compact across the states. So does that kind of regional approach extend to these demand management mechanisms that are being investigated?
So I'll take that the second question first. And so, you know, under the 1922 Colorado River Compact, the obligation of the upper basin states to ensure that flows at that dividing point, Lee Ferry, are a certain amount on average over time is an upper basin-wide obligation. So there was a follow-on compact a few decades later that, you know, divvied up some of the, you know, the water and responsibilities between the upper basin states. But, you know, as far as the 1922 compact goes, that delivery, or excuse me, not delivery, but the flow obligation at Lee Ferry is a collective obligation of the upper basin states. And so certainly those upper basin states, from what I've seen, work quite well together, but they also have an incentive and motivation to work together because of the structure of that 1922 compact. So you asked about timing moving forward for some of these efforts. And so, you know, the pilot program I mentioned is a done deal that ended in 2018. And so really now the regional discussion is about whether it makes sense to move forward with a real, you know, demand management program. And so in 2019, there was federal legislation enacted as part of the drought contingency plan that allowed the upper basin states to store up to 500,000 acre feet of water in Lake Powell under a demand management type program. And this is a big deal to be able to bank water like this. And so now that that federal legislation was passed and that storage capacity exists, now the upper basin states need to decide if they want to put forward a demand management program. And so all four states are really in the planning process at this point, figuring out whether it makes sense to move forward with something like that. And it,
great.
Yeah, good.
Excellent. So that's another thing to keep our eye on in the years ahead. In the interest of time, we're approaching 10 minutes past the hour. So let's just do one more question for each presenter, and then we will wrap up. So how about for Tapan? You identified California's top 10 commodities. Which of these do you expect to be impacted the most by climate change trends that you discussed?
Wow. There is no simple answer to that. So I think, you know, there are different aspects. For example, climate change, I did talk about impacts on pests and diseases. And so, you know, if for certain crops such as almond, walnut, pistachio, if in the future climate, the infestation of important pests are going to be increased, then the damages to those crops are probably going to be significant. When you talk about water is going to be uncertain, and as all the specialty crops in California are irrigated. And so if water is going to be a limiting factor, then crops like strawberries, which are very high value and does not do well under water stress situations, then the damages could be significant to those crops. And you know, California has those different microclimate conditions and all across. And so if we don't get enough chill, then impacts are significant to at least the walnuts or pistachios. And so, you know, it all depends on the prices, impacts, and the commodities itself. So I would say it varies, and depending on the market conditions, the economic impact could be significantly different for different crops.
Well, great. Sounds like you have plenty to work on, keep you busy over the years ahead. Chrissy, we'll end with you. One more question, if you don't mind. How about, you mentioned that the Colorado River Basin has substantial storage capacity. What are the current trends in banking water in this storage, and what potential does using this storage capacity have in the future? And then I guess an extension would be maybe how your survey, you talked about infrastructure was pretty popular. So are there any kind of investigations for future plans for infrastructure in this regard?
Yeah, well, it is unfortunate that improvements in infrastructure aren't really something that fits under this demand management concept. And that is a shame. But there may be other reasons for producers to pursue those kinds of improvements. And about the storage capacity, I mentioned the 500,000 acre feet of storage capacity available in Lake Powell for a demand management program if the Upper Basin states decide to move forward with that. And that seems to me to be a huge advance that policymakers in the seven states have been working on for quite some time to make that, help that be a part of the solution for, you know, dealing with the sticky wicket of supply-demand imbalance moving forward in the Colorado River Basin. And certainly there are a lot of interesting ways that the lower basin states are using storage in Lake Mead in new and creative ways. So there's really, I think, a lot of creative thinking, good creative thinking and problem solving that's taking place in the Colorado River Basin these days.
Well, that's great to hear and appreciate your comment on that. Sounds like we need a lot of creative thinking. And again, just really grateful that both of you are working on these issues, and appreciate you being with us today, presenting your insights and sharing your information, which will be is available online at agandincertaintimes.farmmanagement.org. I have a few more closing remarks as we move forward, but just want to say thank you again to both of you for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
For those who are still able to be with us, the closing remarks pertain to letting you know about some things that are happening in the future. So we have some follow-on programs that we are planning to do later this month in February, and then later in the spring as well. So the one later in February will be on credit conditions in agriculture, and then we'll have another one on climate risk and tools for management, which will be hopefully one day Tapan's tool will be included amongst those. So we hope you join for those webinars, and stay tuned for dates and other details over email. We would also like to hear from you about topics or presentations you would like to see offered in the future. Either send us an entry into the chat pod or send us an email to information@farmmanagement.org. We really appreciate those just as much. We are grateful for people participating and providing us questions today. Any ideas that you have about things that would be useful, hot topics, will be very much appreciated as we move forward. We also have created a survey where you can provide feedback on today's program. So please click the link in the chat window to access those questions and provide us feedback, which the Ag and Uncertain Times team will take into consideration, and we'll be grateful for your feedback on that and your time to do that. So as mentioned earlier, the recordings and other information from this webinar and past ones are available on the Ag and Uncertain Times website. If you are interested in a copy of any of today's presentation slides, they're available to download, and we will have a recording as well soon. Just point your browser to aganduncertaintimes.farmmanagement.org and select the webinars tab. So let me close by again extending our thanks to today's speakers for their first-class presentations on Western Water Systems Update. And thanks also to our Ag and Uncertain Times team and their sponsoring institutions for making this series possible. We would also like to thank all the participants in today's webinar conference and for their participation in providing questions especially. We sincerely hope that you find today's content of value in your work. We hope to see you again in one of our upcoming programs. Until then, we offer you our sincerest hope for success in meeting the challenges of today's uncertain times. For Ag and Uncertain Times, I'm Patrick Hatzenbuehler. Hope you all have a great day.